different time. You'll find
different place. Yes.
Different
yes. Bitch. Yes.
By November, things were totally different. Guests, Marianne Biertle and Rocco Pagel. Translation, Patrick Hubenthal.
A program by Danny Gahl and Achim Lengere. Assistance and research, Andreas von Stosch and Eva Storms. English voices, Jeff Burrell and Dulcie Smart. Sound engineer, Zohar Boni.
Circa eine Stunde ungefähr sind die Grenzen offen, im wahrsten Sinne des Wortes, gestürmt worden. Ja.
Vorhin haben sie noch einzeln durchgelassen, ja. Dann haben sie Tor aufgemacht. Ja. Und jetzt konnten wir alle, so wie wir waren, ohne Vorzeichen, ohne alles, konnten wir gehen.
Ohne jede Kontrolle.
Ohne Kontrolle, ohne alles. Nichts. Ich hab nicht mal einen Ausweis bei.
Seit wann war Ihnen das klar, dass das so geht? Sind Sie einfach hingegangen?
Wir haben vorhin ferngesehen und da hat ein Reporter hier gebracht, dass Bornholmer die Ersten rübergehen durften.
Ja.
In Berlinstraße war noch alles zu. Und da haben wir gesagt, anziehen, losfahren.
Wir hatten gerade noch unsere Protestresolution hier unterschrieben.
Wegen dem Reisegesetz wollten wir gerade noch fertig machen zum Abschicken.
Ich sage, los, jetzt fahren wir zur
Bornholmer. Jetzt gehen wir gucken, ob es stimmt.
Und jetzt will ich auf den Kudamm.
Was, jetzt wollen Sie auf den Kudamm?
Ja,
jetzt wollen wir einmal. Und dann gehen wir wieder zurück.
Und alle wieder zurück.
Arbeiten und übermorgen kommen wir wieder.
Thank you.
Ja, mein Name ist Marianne Birtler und wir sitzen hier zusammen, um uns an eine lange zurückliegende Zeit zu erinnern, an den Herbst 1989, der für mein Leben durchaus prägend war. Und jetzt lese ich eine Passage, in der es um Anfang Oktober 1989 geht. Ich beschreibe zunächst die wunderbare Gethsemane-Kirche und was sich in den Tagen um den 9. Oktober herum dort abgespielt hat, dass viele Menschen dort waren, zum Teil auch über Nacht waren, die da außen war, gab es eine bedrohliche Situation und die
First, I'll describe the wonderful Gethsemane Church and what happened there in the days surrounding the 9th of October. There were lots of people here, and some were staying overnight. Outside, the situation was dangerous, and the Gethsemane Church was one of the centers of the revolution in Berlin, you might say. And some young people who were fasting had set up camp there. They had started fasting as an act of protest, and it got bigger every day as people joined them. And that basically brings me to the point where Rocco comes in. Inside the church, a camp set up in the chancel with sleeping bags, flowers, and teapots began attracting attention. A group of mostly young people who'd been fasting there since the 4th of October. They came in answer to the call of a theologian named Angela Kunze, a quietly charismatic woman who performed as a clown in her spare time. Angela had brought her idea to the vigil group and to us at the youth ministry programme, and we supported it. To help her get into the church unnoticed, I brought her things here from her apartment in my work Trabi, her sleeping bag, a protest statement she'd painted on a large towel, and a few cases of juice. A zone of contemplation grew up around Angela, a space of silent protest and quiet conversation, a good place for all those who had come to the church fleeing fear and worry, and seeking comfort, kind words, or direction. Among the fasters was 16-year-old Rocco, whom I got to know on the 9th of October. Late that evening, an older man walked into the church with an air of determination, accompanied by his daughter, Rocco's mother. He demanded that his grandson be handed over immediately, saying that the boy was a minor and didn't understand what he'd got himself into. The man said he worked at the GDR Council of Ministers, but stressed that his visit to the church was purely a family matter and asked to speak with a pastor or someone else in charge. Eventually, he settled somewhat unwillingly for me. I invited grandfather, mother, and grandson to join me in the parish hall for a talk. What came next was a violent family argument. The grandfather, who insisted that his grandson break off his stay at the church and come home at once, and the mother, torn between her father and her son, were confronted by a distraught and furious young man. In a rage, he accused them of lying to him, screaming in their faces about the brutality he'd experienced over the last few days and nights. Here at the Gethsemane Church, he said, he'd finally found some people he could trust and take seriously. And anyway, he would never dream of leaving. So, technically, I was the city youth liaison. That's an ugly term for a quite lovely occupation. So, at the youth ministry office, we coordinated the youth program of the Protestant Church in East Berlin. But during that time, my main job was to be in charge of what they called the contact phone, We'd set up a kind of information desk at the Gethsemane Church in the parish hall. You have to remember that at that time there were no cell phones, nothing. And since lots of people didn't have phones at home, we had to create some way for people to communicate with each other. When someone's been arrested, when some important event is happening somewhere. And the contact phone became especially important in the early days of October, because all the young people who had been arrested or had been beaten at a demonstration came there seeking refuge, and we were collecting their evidence, their reports. So between my work for the church and my identity as a dissident, if you will, I was really in an ambiguous position. It all got mixed up together.
This is the room where the talk was. This is my grandfather, by the way.
That was here, the discussion was here. So Bittler had her office over here, but you were not present when you were.
Yeah.
You were as well present.
I introduced each other, my grandpa and my Bittler, and then we had a talk.
In here?
I think it was this room, the last one. And then I have to go out, and then they talk alone, but yeah, everything here was a lot of decisions
making.
Okay, yeah.
But she was not working for this specific church.
Yeah, she was for this Gemeinde, I don't know the word, what it is. And she was responsible for the youth working. I don't know how to say.
Did it smell differently?
I think it is the same. Look, this is the original one. I think nothing changed really.
Was in here?
The whole opposition group, Eppelmann, everybody.
Oh, okay.
I'm not historical, but I remember he was founding the Social Democrats of East Berlin. It was here in this town, it was completely full of people and a lot of opposition people.
And how long was the discussion with your grandpa?
I don't know, I remember it was 1 year, I don't know. The time was very stretched. It was intense, I cannot really say. Das ist wahnsinnig nett von mir.
Ja, sehr, sehr nett, danke.
Aber es sollte die Kirche auch nicht sein, weil wir leider nicht in der Mitte des Standes waren. Deswegen sind wir gar nicht auf die Idee gekommen.
Naja,
In the lives of my Western friends, it was very important too. I mean, for them, liberation also meant breaking away from the church. For us, it was the exact opposite. I grew up in a very non-Christian home, and at church I found the freedom to be myself, so to speak. New thoughts, new ideas, new issues, interesting people. And then too, the biggest factor of all was that there were very strict rules that made it a punishable offense for people to gather and do things together in private. Those rules weren't always enforced, but you always had to take them into account. So it was dangerous even to organize a discussion group at home on a relatively harmless topic. That could get very, very nasty. For instance, I had friends who had a handicapped child, and all they wanted to do was meet once a month with parents in similar situations. But the only sensible advice you could give them was, go to your local church and ask whether you can use a room there once a month. Then they'd be considered an official church study group, and that would give them some protection. And the result was that the GDR's first environmental groups were part of the church, and so were the first gay groups, lesbian groups, peace groups, education groups. In the GDR, all these issues that would normally have manifested in civil society anywhere else could only blossom within the church. You could say it was the only public space that was not directly under state control. And the result was also that quite a few of the people who entered politics in 1990 came out of the church in some way, although they were certainly not all Christians.
Eine Erinnerung, die ich sehr, wenn ich an diese Zeit denke, ist doch ein unglaubliches Ereignis. Nach dieser gewaltsamen Auflösung der Demonstration, um die GTM in der Kirche zu sehen, wie die Polizei die DDR-Obrigen vor diesem Zaun, vor dem Grundstück halt lachen. Das war ein für mich unglaubliches Ereignis. Zuerst mal konnte ich so sehen, dass es eine andere Welt gab. Plot of land. Also, weil sonst war that showed Polizei, me for the first time that there was another world. Before then, it had always seemed to me that the police could go anywhere. That they were always around, and now suddenly I was seeing them stop, come to a halt at this piece of property. That was also one of the first encounters between my side and the church. And this other reality, this actual other world within the totalitarian system, there was this island, this movement, and then they hung back. That made a very strong impression on me. My name is Rocco Pagel. I was born in Berlin. I'm an artist, a painter. At that time, I was 16 years old. My friends and I were out looking for this place, and we wound up at the Gethsemane Church. We started out in Rummelsburg, I think. Now, what started was, we were looking for a concert. This was all word of mouth. There was a concert by Die Firma, if I recall correctly, and so we were wandering around Berlin. The police pressure was quite intense. It was an incredibly tense situation. And then we happened to go into the Gethsemane Church. And I just kind of stayed behind because I made a decision. I'm staying here now. Wandering around like that wasn't my thing. And I found what Ms. Kunze wrote there to be quite convincing and believable. Even today, I don't have any kind of rational explanation for it. I just know that I encountered a reality there that said yes to me. That's what it felt like to me. And I said yes back to it.
If I could just add something, the church was quite an unusual place on the outside, too. A lot of churches have an enclosed area in front where you go up a couple of steps, and it's like that here, too. And then on the wall around that area, it was like mountains because of all the candles that had been placed one on top of the other. And there were a lot of people there. including some rather unconventional ones.
The vigil group,
and all around the police. So I think anyone who happened by would have been drawn in. What's going on there? And there were big banners too, calling for prisoners to be released. So even then, it was really a magical place.
Andere Freunde in Kontakt mit, ich weiß nicht, kann rückblickend auch nicht sagen mit Oppositionellen, aber wir waren in heftigste Diskussionen verstrickt. Und ich hatte in meiner Schule, habe ich in die Wandzeitung den händisch den Satz geschrieben, Freiheit für die
Months before that, in der summer, Spring 1989, through other friends, I had already been in contact with, in retrospect, I can't call them dissidents, but we had intense discussions. In my school, I handwrote Freedom for the Prisoners in Leipzig on the news board. In part, I was inspired by the Ossietzky Oberschule. That made a big impression on me, the things I heard from there. And I thought, I just need to bring some clarity to the situation now. But it turned out I was pretty much alone. There was the sentence on the news board with my signature under it, and things got very uncomfortable for me. And then suddenly, months later, I was seeing the same kind of demand at the church, and I saw people who were more or less openly standing up for something. That was completely new to me, and that's what made me stay there. That was in April, May 1989. It was a very spontaneous act because the area where I grew up was really, as I already knew at the time, and I've read about since then, there were a lot of Stasi, a lot of East German diplomats. It was a very pro-government neighborhood. The Stasi prison was nearby in Hohenschönhausen. The prison was one of those places that I often passed on my way to visit friends without ever realizing or knowing what it was. It was like a blind spot. Now, how should I put it? A negative place. But it wasn't marked.
Very clearly a non-place.
Sentries with machine guns. But really, for me, that was practically normal, that kind of negative energy. And then, I think, then at some point, I wanted to discuss it. I wanted to know. I mean, I was very open, even at 15 or 16. So I would go again and again to the people I could approach, and I'd ask them, so what's wrong with that Rosa Luxemburg quote? What's the problem with other opinions? Explain it to me. I was almost desperate. Explain it to me. What I got in response was either silence or these canned figures of speech. So, one of those moments when I tried to let it all out, that was my sentence. Because in spite of everything, I still wanted a discussion. So I wrote that sentence. And then when I passed the pen around, no one took it or wrote anything. That was rather unfortunate. I'm not very smart tactically. I could have been a lot smarter about it, which made the encounter at the Gethsemane Church all the nicer. All of a sudden, I had good friends. But that genuine openness For me, that was like being saved. Some people might misinterpret that, but really it was so, so good to see that. To see those people there that I didn't know, that I got to know. The atmosphere there was unbelievably liberating for me. Very important that that's the way it was.
Die Veranstaltungsform, die sich da entwickelt hat, die wurde Fürbitteandacht genannt. Weil es musste ja alles sozusagen auch christliche Veranstaltung sein, nach außen hin, aber für viele auch nach innen hin.
What it evolved at that time was this kind of event that was called an intercession service. Because of course everything had to be, as it were, a Christian ceremony, outwardly, but for many inwardly as well. I would just describe it as a cross between a political gathering and a church service. There were really elements of both. People came to get political information and to keep their spirits up, to find strength in being together. But there was praying and singing too. The ones who weren't Christians maybe just sat through those parts. But by the end, at least, when we sang Dona Nobis Pacem in canon, everyone was standing up and holding hands. And sometimes I think that the revolution remained so peaceful, at least as far as the demonstrators were concerned, you can't say the same of the police, that in part it was because so many people had been drawing strength together, so to speak, in that atmosphere. You don't go out of a church like that and pick up a rock. At the very least, there's, I don't want to make too much of it, but I think there's a deeper connection, you know, between the spirit of those demonstrations and religious ideas and practices. It might be a good thing anyway that there was a connection. I mean, I had friends who were really aloof from the church, and it wasn't easy for them to accept that the space in which they could be politically active was not of their own choosing. It was a religious space. It's not what they would have chosen on their own. On the one hand, they were happy to take advantage of it, even though at the same time, everyone knew that you had the right to stand in a square somewhere and speak. But the Christians were respectful of the fact that some people were uncomfortable, and you didn't want to overwhelm them with Christian practices or expectations or ideas. And it was always a negotiation with these events, how much of it would be a church service, and how much would be a political gathering.
mit 16 damals habe ich nicht damit gerechnet, in der Kirche nicht damit gerechnet, dass es innerhalb von so unglaublich kurzer Zeit so etwas wie Wiedervereinigung kommen würde.
Back then at 16, I never imagined that anything like reunification could happen in such an unbelievably short time. Just the feeling I had about reform, discourse, things opening up. I personally had no conception of reunification. So it just never came up for me back then. For me, one of the high points I remember was when the news was going around that the Council of Ministers had stepped down. That was just incredible to me. The fact that something was moving, that movement was happening, that in itself was enough for the moment. And I did think, if I remember right, that there would be internal changes. And everyone I knew was generally very skeptical that we are the people would at some point turn into we are one people.
Das war für mich damals sehr erschreckend, muss ich sagen. Also diese Geschwindigkeit, wie auf einmal aus diesem, nicht im Nachhinein.
Quite alarming, I must say. I mean, the speed, how all of a sudden these, as I read afterwards, how these Stasi people, state security officers at every level, were suddenly friends of Greater Germany. How all of a sudden the GDR flag came down within what felt like minutes, from my teenage perspective, and the German flag went up.
Really?
Oh yeah. That was really quite a serious blow. The way the people who had seemed so hostile and cold to me before were now suddenly incredibly happy that the Deutschmark was coming, that Germany had won the World Cup. Just how fast that all went. There was a story at the time that I really... That was really hard for me to deal with. About how one of the teachers at my school who was... You know, what's the word? A hardliner. Now, right after the wall came down, he had been very rigid and had gotten very angry with me, too. How he took down the old news board and put up a subway map of West Berlin instead. It took me years to find a way. That was very hard for me.
It's bigger inside than outside.
Wow. Surfacing, asking. This is a Protestant church, isn't it?
Of course. We stay here.
So how is it? Maybe everything is just give me a second, so we'll record a little bit of sound and then we'll speak.
Und ich glaube, bei mir war es eben diese Herkunft auch aus so einer sehr rationalen mit einer Struktur. Also so diese sehr,
I think for me it was having come from this very rational structure, meaning very sympathetic to the government, to the party, although in a veiled way. It might sound a little strange, but all those tonalities, maybe the best way to explain it is as the difference between a march and a hymn. I don't know if that gets it across. One is very directed. It's about direction, about being a soldier marching to an idea. And the other is about presence, being in the moment, singing with other people. So in that group, the movement tends to be more inward towards something within. And for me, that was, I mean, I can only sort of describe it, but that's how I experienced it then, slowly feeling my way along through a lot of happy accidents and through discussions with friends and with theologians that I still respect a lot. And afterwards, the discussion continues. Really, it's always continuing.
Die feiern hier also eine riesige Sektparty, die Leute, die hier direkt aus der DDR angekommen sind. Seit wann seid ihr in West-Berlin?
Seit ungefähr einer Stunde.
Und wie seid ihr rübergekommen?
Nach Arbeit losgelaufen mit der S-Bahn hierher gefahren.
Direkt mit der S-Bahn mal eben zum Café Kranzler.
Wir sind über die Grenze gelaufen und dann ein paar drei Stationen von.
Wir haben die Autos abgestellt in Berlinstraße und sind dann zu Fuß rübergekommen.
Ja, einfach so. Die Massen gedrängelt, ohne Ausweis, gar nichts. Wir sind einfach mit den Massen, mit dem Strom mitgelaufen. Dann sind wir hier in West-Berlin in die erste S-Bahn-Station eingestiegen und drei Stationen bis Zoo gefahren. Und dann sind wir jetzt hier und feiern eben, dass wir auf dem Kudamm stehen.
Wir haben sowjetischen Sekt mitgebracht aus der DDR.
Und die Sektgläser gleich mit dazu.
Ja.
Wir wurden super empfangen, es war einfach ein Wahnsinn, man kann es überhaupt nicht fassen, ja. Wir waren Wahnsinn.
Eins möchte ich laut und deutlich sagen, wir, wie wir hier stehen, möchten alle wieder zurück und morgen pünktlich auf Arbeit sein. Unbedingt.
Ja. Auf Arbeit. Ja. Könnt ihr uns besuchen.
Ja. Im Café Moskau immer ein herzlicher Empfang für alle Bürger, die aus der BRD kommen.
Unmoved by his grandson's words, the grandfather threatened to call the police and have him removed from the church. Meanwhile, I was searching for some way of protecting Rocco, while also preventing more serious harm. The old man really might make good on his threat to call the police, I thought. And the way things were then, that could easily give them an excuse to force their way into the church. I pointed out that while he might have the power to remove his grandson from the church by force, I had children around the same age, and from my experience, I was fairly certain that he would accomplish nothing that way, or maybe even the opposite of what he wanted. And surely he didn't want his grandson to cut himself off from the family completely. My words seemed to be reaching Rocco's mother, at least, who'd been following the exchange in gloomy silence. I suggested we all take time to think it over and talk again the next day with the youth pastor, Wolfram Hülsemann. Rocco was allowed to stay that night, and thereafter. To my surprise, I began to see his mother occasionally at church events over the following weeks.
Wie ich sie beschreibe. Also ich kann mich erinnern, also das ist aber wirklich, also da ist vielleicht auch die Zeit, hat da die Farben. Und ich kann mich erinnern, dass ich meinen Großvater zum ersten Mal nicht
im Haus hatte. And I'm sure this is colored by time, but I remember that the first time I saw my grandfather wearing a suit was when he walked into the church. It came as a huge shock to me, because up till then I'd never known my grandfather to go anywhere or show up in my life in any way, unexpectedly. I used to play sports, for example, and it wasn't too bad either. No one ever came. It was normal for me to have no one there. Now here I am in the Gethsemane church, and suddenly he comes walking in with my mother. That was, first of all, a positive thing for me. I was just touched. At that moment, it never occurred to me that something else might have been intended. Because from my perspective, of course, the reality of the GDR of East Berlin just was what it was, which is why I couldn't possibly imagine that it might feel different to someone else, that they might... And then I realized that it was a gesture directed at me.